so you know, it looks like we're missing Jay Lund still and Diane McKnight. And I sent them reminders just now.
Okay, it's 9 o'clock and the floor is yours.
Great. All right, well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to day two of the Delta Independent Science Board meeting. I'm Elizabeth Canuel, Chair of the Delta Independent Science Board, and I call the meeting to order. We'll begin with a roll call of both the present and incoming board members. So I'll start with the present members of the board. And you just need to say present or indicate that you're participating in the meeting. So Elizabeth Canuel here. Steve Brandt.
Steve Brandt, present.
Tracy Collier.
Here.
Joe Fernando.
Present.
Tom Holzer.
Present.
Jay Lund. I think Jay will be joining us. Richard Norgaard.
Mostly here.
Vince Resch.
Here.
John Weens.
Yep, that's me.
All right. And now we'll move to our incoming board members. Jim Clern.
Here.
Virginia Dale.
Good morning.
Tanya Heikkilä.
Here.
Diane McKnight. Bob Diamond.
Here.
And Lisa Wanger.
Here.
All right. So just a brief overview of the agenda for today's meeting. We will begin with a presentation and discussion about the upcoming Delta Conveyance Project. And then we'll move into the reflections portion of our meeting. So we'll have a reflection from Dr. John Calloway as he is closing out his term as Delta lead scientist. We'll also have reflections from each of the outgoing Delta ISB members. And then we'll have a brief discussion about preparing for upcoming Delta ISB members, a review of items for follow-up from this meeting, and then we'll adjourn. And we expect to adjourn by around noon today. Okay, so I'll repeat the housekeeping notes about the public comment process. So we will take, So we'll take written comments and questions from the public. Please email your public comments to disb@deltacouncil.ca.gov. In your request, please indicate the agenda item that you would like to comment on. And if you prefer to provide oral comments, please use the raise hand function in Zoom or email us again at disb@deltacouncil.ca.gov and note the agenda item on which you would like to provide public comment. And then just wait and there'll be an opportunity where we prompt you to provide your public comment. When giving comment, please state your name and affiliation so that the board knows who is addressing it. So before we get started on our first agenda item, are there any public comments?
There are none, but I think Jay just joined us.
Okay, great. Welcome to the meeting, Jay. Yes. All right. So without further delay, we'll move into our presentation and discussion on the Delta Conveyance Project. As some background information for the board and our audience, back in April 2020, the Delta Independent Science Board submitted a letter to the Department of Water Resources as part of the comment period for the notice of preparation for the Delta Conveyance Project. In our letter, the Delta ISB indicated that we planned to review the environmental impact report for the Delta Conveyance Project as part of our legislative mandate to provide scientific oversight of programs that support adaptive management. In addition, we shared some insights and expectations based on our previous review of the EIS documents for the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, as well as the California Water Fix. We invited DWR to this meeting to discuss the Delta Conveyance Project and our future review of the EIR associated with this project. So today we have Carrie Buckman from the Department of Water Resources at our meeting. She will provide an overview of the project, including timeline and review process. She'll also provide some thoughts on the letter that we sent to the Department of Water Resources. She'll also discuss whether there are specific requests that might be useful to DWR if the Delta ISB decides to review and comment on the draft EIR. Following Carrie's presentation, there'll be an opportunity to ask questions of DWR, and then we'll hear another presentation related to this project from the Delta Protection Commission, and it'll provide some perspectives on the Delta as place considerations in providing an EIR that is based on best available science. So as part of today's meeting package, we have included a copy of the letter from the Delta Protection Commission so that you could review those comments from Eric Vink. Following the Delta Protection Commission presentation, we'll also hear from the Council's Planning Director, Jeff Henderson, who will also provide some brief comments. And we'll take public comments on this issue, but we'll wait until the end of the agenda item following our discussions with DWR and the Delta Protection Commission. So let's turn things over to Carrie Buckman and her presentation.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here to talk to a group of both the present and the incoming ISB members. So I'm going to share my screen. Okay, hopefully everyone can see the presentation. All right, I see some nodding heads. All right, so we'll go ahead and get started. Okay, so I know a lot of ISB members have been part of past Delta Conveyance Planning efforts, so I wanted to provide a quick overview of where we've come from and where we're going. So in 2006 to 2015, DWR was working on the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, and that then split into California Water Fix that was focused on conveyance and the Eco Restore effort that's focused on habitat restoration. So from 2016 to 2018, we were working on California Water Fix, and in July of 2017, there was CEQA approval of the California Water Fix Environmental Impact Report, or EIR. Refinements to Water Fix continued through 2018 until May 2019, when DWR withdrew all prior Water Fix approvals and ceased all planning on that project. And we have now shifted to the new Delta Conveyance Project. So this is a proposal to add diversion and conveyance facilities for the SWP, or State Water Project, in the Delta, And this is based on governor direction to study a single tunnel conveyance project rather than the dual tunnel project that was considered in Waterfix. And so the Delta Conveyance Project started with the notice of preparation in January of 2020. And the purpose and objectives of the Delta Conveyance Project are to develop new diversion and conveyance facilities in the Delta necessary to restore and protect the reliability of SWP water deliveries in a cost-effective manner consistent with the state's water resilience portfolio. And our objectives, we want to be able to continue having the SWP be a functional water delivery system in the face of many challenges. So we want to address sea level rise and climate change, minimize water supply disruption due to seismic risk, protect water supply reliability, and provide operational flexibility to improve aquatic conditions. So I have a map here. I know it's a little small, that shows some of the project facilities. And one of the reasons that I wanted to show this is that it is a little bit updated from the notice of preparation map, where we included some corridors for where the tunnels may occur. But we do have some additional information now about more specific layouts that are shown in this map. So the specific project facilities include two intake facilities on the Sacramento River. And the NOP identified three potential locations, but we will be picking two of those three locations. We then have tunnel reaches and tunnel shafts to connect those intakes to the South Delta. We have a South Delta forebay, a southern forebay, which is adjacent to Clifton Court forebay, a South Delta pumping plant that pumps water from the tunnel up into the southern forebay, and then a conveyance facility to connect that southern forebay to the existing South Delta pumping plants. And the map shows two different options. We are looking at either an eastern or a central alignment for the proposed project. We're not looking at having both in the proposed project. We're just looking at picking one for a single tunnel project. And I know that again, a lot of you have familiarity with the Waterfix effort. And so we wanted to highlight some of the differences between Delta Conveyance and Waterfix to help understand where we are right now in the planning process. So for the central alignment of the Delta Conveyance project, there is a similar alignment to the California Waterfix proposed project. But there is a decrease in the number of intakes and overall capacity. California Waterfix had three intakes at 9,000 CFS capacity, and Delta Conveyance has two intakes for a total of 6,000 CFS capacity. There's also a decrease in the size and the number of tunnels. California Waterfix had two tunnels with a 40-foot inside diameter, and Delta Conveyance is looking at one tunnel with a 36-foot inside diameter. And one of the implications of that change in size is that there will be a decrease in the amount of reusable tunnel material produced by construction of the tunnel. Additionally, Delta Conveyance does not have an intermediate forebay. The hydraulic analysis found that it was not necessary, and Waterfix had an intermediate forebay on Glanville Tract. The Delta Conveyance project does have a larger southern forebay based on the engineering details that are known at this time. We are looking at only tunnels with no open channels proposed for South Delta Conveyance. In Waterfix, there were some open tunnels and tunnels to connect to the existing pumping facilities. But in Delta Conveyance, we're only looking at tunnels. And then in Waterfix, there were five temporary barge landings proposed. And for Delta Conveyance, we aren't proposing any barge landings as part of the proposed project. Then talking a little bit about the eastern alignment, the Delta Conveyance East alignment is similar to the California Waterfix East alignment alternatives, but there is a pretty major difference in the southern area. The Waterfix East alignment alternatives terminated in a southern forebay that was in a different location, south of Clifton Court forebay. So the southern end of the eastern alignment alternatives, that part was different than the Delta Conveyance Project East alignment, which terminates in the same location as the central to the west of the Clifton Court forebay. So for Delta Conveyance Eastern alignment, we have a difference in the number of intakes and overall capacity. The California Waterfix East alignment alternatives had five intakes with 15,000 CFS capacity total, and Delta Conveyance, again, has two intakes with a 6,000 CFS capacity total. And the other major difference for these is that the Eastern Alignment alternatives for WaterFix looked at canals with siphons or tunnels under waterways, but the Delta Conveyance East Alignment is all tunnel. And so there's a pretty substantial difference in the surface impacts of those efforts. So this figure shows the overall environmental review process that we'll be going through. And we started line one with the notice of preparation, and then we conducted scoping meetings, and we've documented those in a scoping summary report. And we're currently working on the agency outreach plan to further outreach. We've also started on line two, developing alternatives. From here, we'll be further defining the project and the alternatives, completing technical reports to analyze technical aspects of those alternatives, and then putting that all into an impact and mitigation analysis that will be documented in the draft EIR in line three. And that draft EIR will be the document that is circulated for review. So that will be where the ISB review occurs. Man, it never fails that I'm on a meeting and I get other calls coming in. The joys of working from home. Sorry about that. Okay, so it's gonna ring for just another minute. Finally, after we have the public review, we'll address all of the comments, we'll respond to those comments, and incorporate changes into a final EIR and a notice of determination. So currently, I wanted to provide an overview of where we are right now. As I mentioned, we did issue a scoping summary report in July. This report documents the scoping process and summarizes the scoping comments. It also includes attachments that have all of the comment letters received and the transcripts from the 8 public meetings that we had. And we started working on the draft EIR. We're still really in early days of this work, so we're primarily documenting existing conditions and working on methodologies for how we'll analyze the different resource area impacts. Also, the National Environmental Policy Act compliance is moving forward. The United States Army Corps of Engineers has indicated that they're preparing an environmental impact statement, or EIS. So they're planning to start that process by issuing a notice of intent later this summer, and that will start their scoping process. And finally, we've finalized an initial study, mitigated negative declaration for soil investigations. So these investigations will help us better understand the soil conditions and geology in the Delta, and that will help inform the planning for Delta conveyance, as well as a general understanding of the geologic conditions in the Delta. As I mentioned, one of the things that we've been working on is trying to identify alternatives. And we received a lot of suggestions for alternatives during the scoping process. And so we've developed a process to consider and screen all of those alternatives based on the CEQA criteria for identifying a reasonable range of alternatives. And so first we're putting the alternatives through a filter to look at how well they meet the basic project objectives. And if they at least meet most of those objectives, they're moving to filter two to see if they have the potential to avoid or substantially lessen an expected significant environmental effect of the proposed project without causing other significant environmental effects of an alternative. So if it passes those filters, then it will be considered. And we will document this in extensive detail in the draft EIR. We'll have an appendix that goes through and considers all of the alternatives and compares them to these screening criteria and identifies how well they satisfy those criteria and why they are or are not moving forward for further analysis in the main body of the EIR. But I also wanted to highlight that we are considering a new alternative based on these considerations. So one alternative that we've decided to add is the Bethany Reservoir alternative. And so this alternative, rather than terminating in a new forebay adjacent to Clifton Court, it would terminate into the Bethany Reservoir that's just south of Clifton Court forebay, shown on this slide. This would not require construction of a new southern forebay. And so that would result in fewer surface impacts because we don't need to have that major construction effort. Additionally, we wouldn't need the two tunnels right now that are proposed to connect to the Southern Delta Conveyance facilities. However, we're still in early days of this. I don't know that we know if it will live up to its potential. It will have a really significantly sized pumping plants to get water up into Bethany Reservoir, which is at a higher elevation. And so we're going to need to see how the impacts compare, but we think it has the potential to lessen impacts because of that decreased surface size of the construction effort. So now I wanted to walk through some of the comments that we received in the ISB scoping letter. And I did want to reiterate as we start through this that we're still in really early phases of EIR development. So some of the comments, you know, we're thinking and we're trying to figure out how we want to work through it, but we don't have a specific plan yet. So just keep that in mind as we walk through the comments. So the first comment from the ISB is about adaptive management, that adaptive management should be considered in all phases of the Delta Conveyance Project, including early phases of project planning. And we are planning to take these comments into consideration when developing a more detailed adaptive management plan. And we are planning to consider that earlier, but at this point, we're still trying to define the project. So we're still a little bit early for this discussion, but we are planning to talk about this during our continued early consultation with the Delta Stewardship Council. And we expect that and hope that we'll receive additional feedback from the ISB on this topic when you're reviewing the EIR. The next comment was about scientific information. So the ISB suggested that EIR comments should incorporate new findings from recent scientific work throughout the process, including findings from climate change science. And the EIR team is working to update background information and methodologies for all resource areas that will be analyzed, including climate change and seismic risk of levees. But we also acknowledge that the Delta Plan consistency best available science is considered right up to the point of submission of the certification of consistency, whereas it's a little different from developing a baseline for CEQA, which is established at the time of the publication of the notice of preparation. Communication. The ISB suggested clear communication of principal findings, alternatives, and uncertainties throughout the EIR documents, including use of graphics and informative summaries. And I will say this is not the only comment we've received on the topic of making this understandable. I think a lot of people had issues with the readability and understandability of the WaterFix EIR. We get a lot of people who did not appreciate the length of the EIR and the just sheer volume of information that was included. So we're working on it. We're trying to figure out how to increase the readability of the document. We're hoping to move some of the highly technical discussions to appendices. It's a really complex project, and it requires a lot of analysis that can be somewhat difficult to wade through. So we're hoping that by including it in appendices, it's still transparent and the information is available, but the main body of the document would be more readable. We're also hoping to limit the number of alternatives. The WaterFix document had 18 alternatives, which feedback I've received was definitely that people found that too much. And so it was too hard to get through all of the content. So we're trying to keep that smaller and more manageable to make the document more readable. And we're also considering a companion document to help the public understand what's included in the EIR. A lot of the EIR and even the executive summary is focused on CEQA requirements, which doesn't always help the general public understand the project and the trade-offs and really just an understanding of what they're looking at. So we're thinking about trying to have something that's focused a little bit more on a public audience that isn't aimed at complying with CEQA, but is sort of just aimed at summarizing the key findings in a way that will be interesting and useful to the public. So we're still trying to think about how to do that, but it's something that we're working through. Long-term effects. The ISB suggested that the EIR document should consider future uncertainties, such as groundwater changes and timing of sea level rise in the analysis of the long-term performance of alternatives. And the EIR documents should discuss contingencies when possible, and risk analysis should be included in the process. Our proposed methodology does include expanded modeling to look at long-term climate change and sea level rise in a more robust way. And we have been talking a little bit about SGMA and how we should incorporate groundwater considerations. And so, you know, the comment about how this could change agricultural conditions within the San Joaquin Valley. CEQA compares what would happen with the project to existing conditions. So with SGMA, we do expect that there would be less pumping in the future, and therefore there may be a change in growing patterns. If Delta Conveyance does help provide some part of a suite of a portfolio of actions that would allow a little bit of additional agricultural activity compared to existing conditions. We don't expect it to increase that production. However, NEPA does require a comparison of the future without project to a future with project condition. So there may be some changes there under that analysis. And then the last comment on Delta residents and visitors. The ISB recommends the impacts of project construction on Delta residents and visitors should be summarized and presented in a coherent and understandable way. And we acknowledge the importance of synthesizing information for Delta residents and visitors. It's not necessarily a requirement for CEQA, but we do know it's important, so we're trying to consider ways we can do this. And we are continuing to meet with the Delta Protection Commission to discuss Delta as a place consideration. So as my last slide, I just wanted to highlight there are a lot of ways to stay informed. We're posting regular blog updates and sending regular e-blasts about where we are in the project and trying to present when we can to other agencies that may be interested, such as you guys. So I think, I don't know if the plan is to take questions now or wait until after the DPC presentation, but I think that's the end of my presentation.
So we can take a few minutes for questions and comments from the board for Carrie, and then we'll go on to the next presentation, but we'll hold off on public comments until the end of the agenda item. So are there questions or comments from members of the Delta ISB?
I've got a comment and a question. One is that, thanks Carrie for doing this. It's a really helpful update. And I know in our review of the BDCP, we also had a number of recommendations in there, particularly ones that might still be relevant in terms of presentation style and things like that. So that might be useful. Secondly, what do you see as your best guess of the timeline of when you'd expect to have something ready for our board to look at?
Yeah, you probably noticed we didn't have a timeline slide in the presentation.
Just the best guess of man things.
So the timeline is a little bit up in the air right now. So I did mention in the presentation that the Army Corps of Engineers is just coming on board to start their NEPA process. And so the issue with that is that we're still trying to define schedule between the two agencies. So it looks like the Corps will want to produce a separate EIS rather than a joint EIS-EIR. So we're going to have two documents out for public review. And from our perspective, we'd like it if we could align those two review periods so that while there are two documents, they are coming out at the same time. It will, I think, make it at least a little bit easier for the public to review both. So because of that, they're still at the point where they haven't issued their NOI, we haven't been able to nail down a revised schedule. So earlier documents indicated that we'd have a public review EIR at the beginning of 2021. I expect that will slip as we work through the process with the Corps, but we don't have a revised timeline yet.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks. I think I saw Jay's hand up.
Yes, just to be maybe a little bit more precise, but allowing you a lot of wiggle room, because we have a lot of new board members and they're probably to be just really worried to get up to speed on this. What is the soonest possible time you can imagine that an EIR might become available for us to review within the range of several months?
I mean, I think the soonest would be me. I mean, we've been talking about having it in early 2021. We're not going to be able to do that. I guess spring of 2021 would be the earliest, but okay. I don't know
that's
yet.
That's really helpful, I think,
okay,
for a lot of us. I would, again, echoing Steve's point, I would look at on the earlier EIRs as succinct ways of summarizing comparison of alternatives for an EIR that were just abominably presented in the previous EIR. Just not moving stuff to an appendix, sure, that's fine, but really the summary needs to be readable. I think the summary for the previous EIR was 200 pages or something like that. And having something where, you know, a normal human mind can wrap their head around the basic ideas would be really, really helpful. Thank you. Thank you for a very informative presentation.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. And just to follow up on that, you know, that there were many suggestions about presentation of information, but two things that I remember from the process. One was to have executive summaries for each of the chapters that are written for a lay audience. And then the other was better use of graphics so that information was, you know, not always embedded in the text, but that there were illustrations that helped the readers follow the process.
Okay.
And the other thing, Liz, that a small thing, but one we've brought up several times, is if you could really have hyperlinks embedded in the text so that when you referred to another section of the environmental documents, you could click on it. Because when we've got 40,000 or 70,000, I don't even know how many tens of thousands of pages, and in an electronic document, trying to get to those other sections just took a phenomenal amount of time. And it was just a total frustration for people. So that would be really, really helpful.
I've forgotten who had hands up. So if you raised your hand, could you raise it again so I can make sure everybody's questions are asked? Yes, Joe.
Yeah, how long we will have to get this document through and give you the report?
At this point, we're planning on a 90-day period.
And Lisa?
So I'm a newbie, Carrie. Thank you for that very clear presentation. I learned a lot. Just something that I've experienced with other EIRs and EISs, and it relates to your slide about the risk assessment recommendation. Do you envision that you will, as part of this communication with people, help to put some of the changes into a risk assessment framework? It's kind of a pet peeve I have with EIRs is, you know, this is the magnitude of change. And it's really hard to understand whether that magnitude of change is meaningful. So is that going to be part of how you incorporate risk assessments?
I don't know yet, I think is the simple answer. I think that from my perspective as a practitioner, I understand where you're coming from. I think risk assessment to me is a pretty specific set of processes. And I'm not sure that we would be applying that to a lot of things, but I think your point of being able to explain the magnitude in a way that people can understand if it's meaningful is something that we definitely need to work on in the environmental document.
Thank you. Other questions from the board?
Just to be clear, then, it sounds like when you say 90 days that we would be asked to review this at the same time that it's out for public review?
That is the current plan, yeah. As part of WaterFix, there was sort of a preliminary review, but that people found that generally to be kind of frustrating. It was a publicly available document earlier in the process. Because it was clear on the release information that the comments weren't going to be incorporated into the public draft, but generally people didn't like it that they commented on that and then their comments weren't addressed in the public draft. So we're trying to focus all reviews on the public draft when it is sort of ready to be reviewed and then address those comments in the final.
So I wanted to ask you about the alternatives. You mentioned that maybe in this set of documents, the goal would be to have a smaller number of alternatives. But I was wondering how you'll work through those in terms of public and engagement and transparency in the whittling down of those different alternatives.
So we have, as part of this effort in this iteration, we have an organization called the Delta Conveyance Design and Construction Authority. And that authority is a joint powers authority of the water agencies that may receive water from the project. And their purpose at this point is to work on the design and eventually the construction of a potential project. So at this point, they're supporting DWR's efforts by providing design information, conceptual design for inclusion in the EIR. So So that entity, also known as the DCA, has a stakeholder engagement committee that for a while was meeting twice a month and is now meeting monthly. And it's a very public forum. And the DCA has been going over the design work that they're doing in glorious detail with the stakeholders, talking through a lot of the different aspects of the project and trying to shift facilities where possible to reduce the potential for community effects. So they're really focusing with this group on trying to identify designs that would minimize effects to the local communities. So in the last stakeholder engagement committee, which was at the end of July, I went to that meeting and presented where we are on the alternatives. And we've publicized that information on our website as well. So we have been sharing that with the public as we go.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions from members of the board?
Yes, I have one for Carrie. Carrie, how much new field work is going to be done for this project? Because there was so much done for WaterFix and the alignments are so similar.
So we're working on having some additional field work, but we're trying to focus on areas that we think it might really be beneficial to the alternatives evaluation. So at this point, we're looking at some additional biological and cultural field work, some traffic model monitoring in the fall during the agricultural harvest period. There are a few other potential efforts, but really because there has been so much data collection, there isn't mostly what we're looking at right now would be helpful. But if we don't end up being able to obtain that information, we think we have enough information to complete a solid analysis.
Are there any other comments? Right. Well, hopefully you can stick around until the end of the agenda item. But at this time, we'll move on to our second presentation. And I'd like to invite, I believe it's Eric Vink will give the presentation on behalf of the Delta Protection Commission.
Good morning, and thank you, Chair Canuel. And members of the Science Board, I joined the start of your meeting yesterday, and I really appreciated the introductions. I continue to learn new things about the current sitting members of the Science Board. And then I was especially interested to hear a little bit about the backgrounds of the incoming members. So for the members that are leaving, and I'll single out one in a moment, I want to thank you for your service, and I welcome the new members to the board. and while I'm issuing thanks, I want to extend one to John Calloway as well for being a great Delta lead scientist, and wishing him well as he returns to San Francisco, and also welcoming Dr. Laurel Larson, who we will look forward to getting to know and her work in that role. So the member I want to single out is Dick Norgaard, because it was probably about 6 years ago that Dick and Brian Atwater, a former member of your body, came for a visit, and they were interested in looking deeper into social science in the context of the work you do as Science Board members. And it was really that initial prodding by the two of them, and then really brought to conclusion by Dick, that led to first the white paper that the Science Board prepared, and then the creation and appointment of the Social Science Task Force, and then of course the task force's report. Everything that's been discussed in this context is music to our ears at the Delta Protection Commission, being the entity that seeks to represent the voice of the people who live and work and do their recreation in the Delta. So, Dick, I'm going to miss you a lot. I hope we continue to cross paths, and thank you for getting us started on social science in a new and enhanced way within the Delta Science Endeavor.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it.
And maybe just briefly, perhaps for the new members, I'd like to tell you just a little bit about the commission. We actually were the initial Delta agency for the state, formed in 1992, primarily over concern about urbanization moving into the Delta. So initially, the commission was really intended to be a regional land use agency of sorts, where we would ensure that local government land use decisions were consistent with a plan that our commission adopted. And as this was the only Delta agency, over time it was granted additional responsibilities, including trying to create a trail network through the Delta to link the Bay Trail in Contra Costa County with the Sacramento River Trail in Sacramento. And then, of course, our role changed again fairly significantly in 2009 when the Delta Stewardship Council and the Delta Conservancy were created in the Delta Reform Act. And our governing legislation, the Delta Protection Act of 1992, was significantly modified. Most importantly, to create a commission membership, and we have a 15-member commission, that's who I work for, but to create a commission membership that really represented the Delta region. So 11 of our 15 commission members are local officials from the Delta region, county supervisors from each of the five Delta counties, city council members, three of them from different parts of the Delta, and then reclamation district trustees, which are primarily farmers from the three different regions of the Delta. Those are 11 of our 15 members. We, in addition, have four state agency representatives, primarily designees of agency secretaries. But it's that local focus that makes us a little bit unique among state agencies, because we're directed by statute to represent the Delta voice. We are a state agency. We don't necessarily align with the governor's proposals, particularly related to Delta conveyance. And so I really appreciate the opportunity to visit with you today and just to share a little bit about what I went into greater detail in the written communication that I shared with you. But I wanted to make sure that you had a bit of a background, because we're often a head scratcher. People say, how can you be critical of what the governor is proposing with the Delta tunnels, and aren't you a state agency? We are, but we are specifically directed by statute to ensure that we do what we can to protect and enhance what we call the unique Delta values. That's Delta agriculture, recreation, Delta cultural values, which are largely embedded within our historic communities in the Delta, and then Delta natural resources. And so when you hear me refer to Delta as place, it's really shorthand for how we protect and enhance those unique Delta values as the co-equal goals call for, well, the CODA to the co-equal goals. We all know about water supply reliability and restoring the Delta ecosystem, but our role is to be the constant reminder that those two goals are to be accomplished, as the statute states, in a manner that protects and enhances the unique Delta values. As an evolving place, I don't want to forget the evolving place part of it as well. So the other significant change in 1992 was that we were carved out a very specific role to advise the Delta Stewardship Council on Delta as place, and both to inform the Delta plan, but also on any ongoing projects that might follow the adoption of the Delta plan. So we take that charge very seriously. We work very closely with the Delta Stewardship Council. The chair of our commission is a member of the Delta Stewardship Council. So we have a direct voice at the council level in these type of issues and deliberations. But we really strive to represent the Delta region as we implement and make a changes to the Delta plan. We're very appreciative. The commission is very appreciative of the Science Board's involvement in Bay Delta Conservation Plan and Cal Water Fix in those environmental documents, your extensive comments. Thank you. And we especially appreciate the additional focus on social science for all the reasons I mentioned earlier, culminating in the Social Science Task Force. Thank you for that as well. That's really central to our role in representing people in the Delta region, and it's going to be very, we believe, very critical in evaluating the Delta Conveyance Project as an environmental impact report and EIS are released next spring. And our hope for the Delta Conveyance Project EIR, there's just several things I want to mention. I'm not going to go into great detail. But the first is that adaptive management for Delta as place where the impacts are uncertain. And this was something that we felt was extremely deficient in the previous iterations of this project. Maybe adaptive management would have been implemented or utilized if the project had moved forward, but we certainly didn't see any indications that there was going to be any review of these impacts to the Delta region, which are substantial from such a significant industrial scale project stretching over more than a decade. And so we thought that was critically important. We certainly hope that that's better addressed in this go around. Peer review of the evaluation of impacts to Delta as place, and also peer review of economic studies to consider the feasibility of mitigation measures. Our commission believed that the mitigation measures were insufficient in the previous iterations. In part because the understanding of what it would mean on the ground was really not well understood, given the very conceptual nature of the project. Presumably that will be different this time around with the detailed engineering and design work that the Joint Powers Authority, the Design and Construction Authority, is completing on this project. So that might be different. We hope that's different this time. Monitoring impacts during construction so that mitigation can be adjusted based on actual conditions. We certainly hope that that's a feature of what's in the environmental impact report. We really hope that there's an enhanced consideration of the human environment, and frankly, that the human environment in the form of impacts to the Delta region is considered as carefully as the natural impacts. I mean, the amount of time and space devoted to biology and hydrology, and I'm not slighting those in any way, they deserved every bit of the attention they got, but it incredibly dwarfed the amount of attention given to the human impacts in the region that's going to bear the brunt of the effects from the construction of this project. So that's one thing we hope is different. And then, can the project meet its goals and objectives? I mean, really, realistically, how much water can be exported from the Delta, and how will changing climate conditions in the coming decades affect that equation? And a deficiency we believed in the previous effort, and unfortunately I'm afraid it's still true in this effort, is that there's no proposal for improving Delta levees, which frankly are essential for maintaining a dual conveyance system. And DWR has stated explicitly that they still intend to maintain a dual conveyance system, both the isolated conveyance with the single tunnel, but also the existing through Delta conveyance. And ensuring the integrity and health and durability of levees in the Delta is going to be critical to that, not only to ensuring water supply reliability, but frankly also to ensuring that we can maintain the billions of dollars of regional infrastructure that crosses the Delta, not to mention the people that we work with at the Commission, the people who farm and live and do their work within the levied islands. So in closing, I just want to say I appreciate the comments that were made. First off, I appreciate Carrie's presentation, and the Commission's greatly appreciated the openness that they've extended their initial planning, the ongoing communication we're having with them, the detailed sharing of information through the Stakeholder Engagement Committee of the Design and Construction Authority, and her comments earlier, and I continue to learn a few things every time I hear her presentation. So thank you to Carrie, but also appreciation for the comments from Jay Lund and Pierre Canuel, and following that, about the readability and digestibility of the environmental document. And I hope that's something that you all continue to champion, because the last two documents were almost impenetrable for the lay audience. And there's got to be a way to better summarize a very complicated environmental review for a lay audience. So please continue to knock the drum on that. We will as well. The letter that's in your packet points in some additional directions and goes into some additional detail. I'd encourage you to review that. And I'd be happy to speak with any of you at any time. I very much appreciate this opportunity to share these thoughts with you. Again, we greatly appreciate the work of the Independent Science Board, and we encourage you to be as active on Delta Conveyance as you were on its two previous iterations. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. And thank you for your thoughtful letter, as well as your comments reminding us that people are an important part of the Delta, as are the natural resources and organisms that live within the Delta. At this time, do we have any questions or comments from board members for Eric?
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm not seeing any, but I'm anticipating that you'll have other opportunities to interact with the board and with DWR throughout this process, and that Delta S Place issues will continue to be given the attention that they are worthy of. So thank you, Eric. All right. So the next part of our presentation will be some comments from the Delta Stewardship Council's Planning Director, Jeff Henderson.
All right, thank you, Liz, and good morning, both sort of returning and new ISB members. It's a pleasure to meet you, and I've been able to observe a lot of the presentation over the last couple of days, and very much looking forward to working with all of you. My name is Jeff Henderson.
Jesse at AGP Video, right? We're having a low volume coming out of your mic. If you go down to the bottom left of your Zoom window, there's an arrow next to your microphone. And if you go into your settings, you can adjust the volume.
Is that better?
Indeed, it is.
Okay, thank you very much. So good morning. My name is Jeff Henderson. I'm the planning director for the Delta Stewardship Council on the staff here at the council, and very much looking forward to continuing to work with the board as we progress through the council's considerations regarding the Delta Conveyance Project, as well as a number of other matters. Won't take very long this morning, but I wanted to just take a moment to acknowledge that the council staff is in what we refer to as early consultation with the Department of Water Resources Because the conveyance project is a potential covered action under the Reform Act, which essentially means should DWR determine that the project is a covered action, they would file a certification of consistency with the council. We would anticipate, just given the character and scope of the project, that there's high potential for that project to be appealed, at which point the council would be determining whether or not that project and its record is supported by substantial evidence that supports DWR's conclusion that the project is indeed consistent with the Delta Plan. So that makes this environmental impact report a very, very critical piece of the record that ultimately supports that process. And it's keenly why the council staff is interested in also having some dialogue with the Independent Science Board regarding the project. And we will be, as part of that early consultation process, discussing a number of key issues with the staff at the Department of Water Resources, particularly for the purview of this board, concerning adaptive management, best available science, and, as Eric mentioned, some Delta as place considerations. And in all of that, we also intend to keep a keen focus on some of the human dimension issues that underlie those considerations. We noted that the letter that the board received from the Delta Protection Commission includes a number of very good questions that the board may choose to consider in its analysis of the environmental impact report at some point next year, according to the schedule that Carrie indicated. And just wanted to note that council staff may also seek to elevate some key adaptive management and best available science questions to the ISB as those emerge through the early consultation process. And we would continue then to report that progress to the board and pose those questions to be considered potentially as part of your review at a later time in the future as the EIR schedule gets a little bit closer. So just wanted to take a moment and kind of summarize those considerations from the council staff's perspective as well, and state that we very much look forward to working with the board in that context on the project, as well as continued coordination with both the Department of Water Resources and the Protection Commission. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. And thank you for sharing the council's perspectives as we begin to think about this important project. So I'll open up the floor for questions or comments from board members to Jeff. So I'm not seeing any, but before we open the floor to public comment, I just, now that you've heard from Carrie and Eric and Jeff, are there any questions for any of the three presenters in this session?
Diane has a question.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Diane.
I apologize if this is not a well-informed question given my newness on the board, but the topic came up of risk assessment, and this will be a very long construction effort. However it's implemented, it will take years. And in the risk assessment and the environmental assessment, will there be an assessment of particular vulnerabilities to, say, earthquake or something during that construction process, as opposed to risk assessment after it's completed? Do you see what I'm saying? I don't have a sense of that from how, in terms of my knowledge about how an EIR is done, because there's really quite a long period where things would be in process. So if someone could explain that to me, that'd be helpful. Thank you. And again, I apologize if this is a good question right now.
Okay. I don't know. Is that something you can address, Carrie?
Sure. So Generally, in the environmental impact report, we will be looking at the potential environmental effects associated with both construction and operations. So we're sort of looking at the period between whenever a decision is made through the construction effort, and those impacts will be characterized. And then when it's operating, it will be to some extent a different suite of potential impacts. There are quite a few impacts that are primarily impacts during construction. So air quality, traffic, noise, a lot of that is really focused on the construction period. So when we're looking at things like potential geologic impacts, those would also be characterized both within construction and then within operations.
Thanks.
Some other questions or comments? I can only see half of you at a time, so I have to go across two screens to see, but I'm not seeing any comments. All right, well, thank you. And at this time, we'll open the floor to questions and comments from the public.
I currently see none.
Well, I think Jay has his hand up.
Yeah, just to come back to this idea of risk assessment, there's been very few risk assessments done for infrastructure in the Delta, but certainly DWR attempted some of this back in 2008 or 2007, actually. Even a fairly simple risk analysis can sometimes be quite insightful, and you know, certainly there are a lot of good people that have worked in this field that would be probably willing to help DWR or others formulate some insightful risk analyses for these problems. It seems very unlikely that any project will be implemented completely as it is proposed, and the conditions that it will have to be implemented in are likely to be somewhat at variance, at least somewhat at variance from the conditions that it's designed for. The paper that we talked about yesterday, being led by Dick Norgaard on the rapid changes in the environment of the Delta, have engineering implications, operational implications, as well as environmental and people living in the Delta implications. So it would be worth some malice of forethought for DWR to take a look into doing some kinds of insightful risk analysis for this project, if only to enhance the credibility and the thoughtfulness of the discussions.
Thank you, Jay. Any other comments from the board? Okay. And Edmund, you said there are no comments from the public on this issue?
Correct. There are none.
Okay, great. Well, thank you again, Carrie and Eric and Jeff, for joining us this morning. I think it's, I know that the incoming board members will be very engaged, as well as the members of the board who are staying on from our present composition. But I also think it was important to have you address the board at this time, since those of us who will be leaving the board, are interested in this project and wanted to have an opportunity to get to hear from you, Carrie, and hear from the DWR. So thank you all. Okay. And so we'll move on now to the next agenda item. And I just want to check in with Edmund. I know we have a break coming up, but I think we had a couple of people who were interested in providing comments. Do we want to do this before or after the break? I have Joy Zedler and Cliff Dom as potentially giving comments around 10.
Hey Liz, I think Joy is on right now. But I don't see Cliff. I think we should just take a brief break, even though we're a little early, and just reconvene a little later.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and take a 15-minute break, and that would have us reconvening at 10:20, and we'll hear from Joy Zedler and possibly Cliff Dom at that time. So I'll see everyone again at 10:20.
And hey, Joy, we see you online really quick. If you want to do a quick mic check during the break, this will be an opportunity.
Are ready to resume at your leisure.
And hey, Cliff, I see you on. I'm going to promote you as a panelist.
This and this, and then now tell them that you're using my chip. It's on. So they won't talk.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Hi, Cliff.
Hi. My laptop died this morning, so I'm using my wife's machine. Hopefully that won't be any problem.
Yeah. It shouldn't. Your audio is coming in fine. We're on a break right now, and we'll be resuming soon.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I
Okay, well, welcome back, everyone, from our break. And at this stage in the agenda, we're going to hear reflections from some of the outgoing members of our team. We're going to start with reflections from John Calloway on his term as Delta lead scientist. And before I turn things over to John, I just wanted to say a couple of words. I guess, first of all, John has had just a tremendous record of accomplishment during his term as Delta lead scientist. There are more than I can recount here, but you know, the one I think that resonates most with me is his ability to run the proposal solicitation process. This was a very, very successful solicitation. He was able to partner with other agencies to broaden the array of science that was funded as part of that solicitation. And we hope that based on the success, that having regular proposal solicitations will become part of the future. Another thing I just wanted to say was that John, I have benefited from all of the Delta lead scientists, but because John's tenure as lead scientist overlapped with my term as chair, he holds a special place for me. He's just been a remarkable partner, and he's also really strengthened the ties between the Delta Science Program and the Delta Independent Science Board. So, John, I just want you to know that I really have valued our partnership, and I've really valued the openness and accessibility and approachability that you've brought to the position. So thank you, and I'll turn things over to you now.
Thank you very much, Liz. I have to say, I've just truly enjoyed the chance to interact with the board, and Liz, especially with you and with Steve previously as the chair as well. So, for me as an academic, it's just really so rewarding to be able to engage and to serve in a position where there's an opportunity to try and make a difference on some important issues for the state. So, as I said yesterday, interacting with the board really has been one of the most stimulating, interesting, and rewarding parts of my job as lead scientist. So I really thank all of you for all that you've done over the years, all of your reviews, of course, in addition to your the thematic reviews, your input on the science plan, your memos on forward-looking science and rapid change, they've all had an important impact on the science and management community in the Delta. And I very much appreciate that you've delivered some critical and tough input for the science program. I know that staff sometimes are dismayed after the meetings in the short term when they get all of your feedback, but in the long term, I think they truly appreciate your input and all realize, and I realize as well, you've pushed us to improve our products, to improve our efforts, improve our messaging. So that your critical input is just very highly valued. So I think, you know, you all know the Delta science community can be isolated and insular like other local science communities. And I think your outside review and transparent input is just really valuable. It's a reason for the continued improvement in the science in the Delta. And I look forward to all of your ongoing input. And in terms of achievements, I really want to acknowledge the staff. I think lots has been achieved over the last 3 years, but it's really the staff that has made that possible. The staff at the science program, the staff at the council, and the staff at the other agencies. They are just, that's one thing I've learned coming from academia and working in an agency is just how committed and productive and capable the staff are within the state and federal agencies. So they really are the reason that things have been successful. And they have really pushed me to engage on issues. So I feel like I've never been as busy as I've been in the last 3 years, but I've really enjoyed it. So it's just been really remarkable. I see Cliff on the call. I really also want to thank Cliff and Peter Goodwin. They both were incredibly helpful for me. Cliff especially was really helpful in getting started. We had an overlap in the first month that was really valuable. And I regularly consulted with Cliff more than anyone when we had difficult decisions in the science program. So I think that continuity is truly of value. I think for the ISB members, the new members reaching out to the outgoing members will be really valuable because that's really important. And I see Laurel's on the call as well. And Laurel, I'm more than happy to work with you because I think everyone is excited that you'll be joining. And I think you're going to do an exceptional job. So I also want to acknowledge that the ISB has really outstanding support at the highest levels in the council. You heard from Susan Tutayan and from Jessica Pearson yesterday. And I can't say enough that they are incredibly strong supporters for independent science that guides the council and that guides the broader science community. So they really understand the independent role of the science board and the role that the science board plays both for the council as well as for the broader science community. So I think that is important. There definitely is some inherent tension in terms of independence for the board and being connected with the council and connected with the science program. And I know there's that same tension for the science program and being part of the council, but also serving the broader community. But I think the ISB really, you have established your independence and made clear that, you know, your work is the work of the board. And I would encourage you to engage with the council, with the science program, and with the other agencies. I think one thing in talking with all of the outgoing members, you know, in making your reports and your reviews effective, they have to be relevant and they have to be specific to the issues that are being faced in the Delta. So I would definitely encourage you to think about how you can engage more and how you can learn more while maintaining that independence. And I know that the staff is very interested in helping this happen. There are meetings with stakeholders that are set up for some of your upcoming meetings, and there'll be a chance for you to learn more about the science program itself and what the science program staff are engaged in. So I think that will be really valuable for you. So so with all that sort of introductory issues, I want to just talk about a few other topics. So first, I think it may be obvious, but I think collaboration is really critical, and that's where the science program has really been effective, I think. When I came into the job, I think, especially when I was interviewing and preparing for the job, I heard more about combat science than almost anything else. And I think there's been lots of progress. There was lots of progress in the years leading up to when I started in terms of improving coordination and collaboration amongst the agencies. And you've heard about the DPIC, the Delta Plan Interagency Implementation Committee, that brings together a number of agencies. There's many other there's a lot of players. So that's one of the challenges in the Delta. And then there's a lot of coordinating groups. So in addition to DPIC, there's the IEP that you've heard about. There's the Collaborative Science and Adaptive Management Program that you probably haven't heard about, but I'm sure you'll learn much more about, that really also has been very instrumental in encouraging the agencies and the stakeholders to work together. There's the Regional Monitoring Program. So there's a whole bunch of efforts that I think you'll want to learn about over time. As I said, there has been lots of progress in reducing that combat and reducing the coordination. I think in the last year or 2 years, unfortunately, things have become more contentious again. As many of you know, there's a number of lawsuits around the biological opinions and other issues in the Delta. I hope that that won't be as intense and as protracted as the previous disputes, and that there will be an opportunity for things to come together. I will say that I think science is the one place where people do continue to come together, even if there are disagreements around some of the policy issues. At DPIC, the DPIC meeting, science has been one of the key avenues for engagement across all of the agencies. And as I mentioned previously, the DPIC agencies endorsed the ISB Science Needs Assessment and Workshop. So I think they're very interested in facilitating and bringing forward that collaboration. The DPIC has also been deeply involved in science and the Science and Funding Initiative that Randy Fiorini started almost 3 years ago, and that Susan and Amanda Bull at the Council have continued to support and bring forward. So I think there really is lots of interest in doing that. And actually at the last DPIC meeting, Dan Castleberry, who I think some of you know, who's a long-term Fish and Wildlife Service employee who just recently retired at the end of last month. And he, he just made the statement as he was leaving that continued collaboration is the only way we're going to make progress. I think that's really, maybe it's obvious, but I think we can't say it enough. And I mentioned that there's a blog that reflects some of these same thoughts that I'll be putting out soon, that's one of the central themes. I think it's really easy to talk about collaboration, but making it happen and doing it takes a lot of effort. So I would encourage you to think about how the science community in the Delta can work more effectively to collaborate and how you can push us to collaborate more effectively in your recommendations and your reviews. So some of the key areas where we had to have success with collaboration, one, as Liz mentioned, I think is in funding for research. So the collaborative solicitation was really a great effort. You heard Alf Brandt yesterday talk about the fact that most of the funding in the Delta for science goes to monitoring and not as much to research. Actually, the Science and Funding Initiative within DPIC really was motivated by that very issue in terms of how do we get more funding, competitive funding into research so that we can understand the system as much as monitor it. And so money isn't always the answer to all kinds of problems, but I would encourage you to think about how we can make a more effective case for the continuity of science funding in the Delta and the value of science funding and what we really get out of the funding of funding science. One important thing, in addition to the competitive proposals that the science program has supported, is the Delta Science Fellows Program that the new members may not be aware of, but that's a program to support students and postdocs. And we just recently opened it up to master's students. It'll be offered probably every other year in alternating with solicitations. But that really is a great opportunity to grow the pool of researchers. And I think we really need to be mindful of cultivating and growing a diverse community of researchers in the Delta and diverse in a wide range of aspects, thinking about topics, thinking about the community that's engaging, as broadly as we can grow that research community. Another area where I think we've been really successful is in social sciences. That's something that I wasn't really thinking about so much when I started, but clearly is an issue that has gotten lots of traction. And I think your report on Delta as an evolving place, as Eric mentioned, was really integral in making that happen. We have a new Sea Grant social science extension specialist that the council and Sea Grant are jointly supporting that will start later this year. So I encourage the new members, if you haven't seen the social science task force reports, to look at that. I know Lisa and Tanya were very much engaged in some of the workshops that were put on as part of that. But I think that is really encouraging in how much interest there is. At the spring DPIC meeting, there was a presentation on the social science task force, and it was really encouraging to see how many of the regional leaders and state leaders of agencies really spoke up in support of the need for better social science in the Delta. Another area that I think is really, that you have really pushed on and where we've made lots of advancements recently is on climate change issues. So I think, as I mentioned, your memo on forward-looking science has really pushed all of us to think much more proactively around climate change and rapid change. The Science Needs Assessment is a really great collaborative effort with probably every agency in the area, as well as many stakeholders participating in the pre-discussion work, the pre-workshop discussions, and in the planning and everything. So I very much look forward to the workshop. I think it will really be an incredible opportunity for everyone to come together around how we can more effectively address rapid change and climate change going forward. So a few other areas that I want to highlight that are things that are coming up on the horizon: the Science Action Agenda, that's closely linked and being coordinated with the Science Needs Assessment, is a really critical document in setting the priorities for the things that are falling through the cracks, the immediate research needs to address management issues. Actually, right when I started, Cliff and the staff were just finishing up the 2017 Science Action Agenda. And now we're beginning to prepare for the update for the next 5 years. That sets the priorities for funding in the Delta, for our research funding. And so it's really a critical document. And I know you'll be asked to provide input on that. I think one thing that the science program has gotten much, much better at is effectively reaching out and engaging the community across all the mix of agencies and the stakeholders. So that the Science Action Agenda, the Science Plan update, there was the science program has led that effort, but all of the agencies and stakeholders have bought into it and participate. So I think that's really critical. And I think your input will be valuable on that. Another area where there's lots of opportunity is in modeling and forecasting. I know this is directly linked to the Science Needs Assessment efforts that you have all been promoting. I know Laurel is very interested in this as well, so I'm sure it will be something that will be growing within the science program's effort. We do have an integrated modeling steering committee that has done a lot of valuable work over the last few years, and a report by Tetra Tech on providing strategies for improving integrated modeling. So I look forward to seeing how that is going to develop. I also think your monitoring enterprise review is something that will be incredibly valuable. That, along with the IEP review, I think will really push us to think much more critically about how we're doing monitoring in the Delta. And I look forward to seeing how that develops. The current members are very much aware of a new effort within the science program, the Delta Science Tracker, which will be a online user-friendly database of science activities within the Delta. We hope to incorporate all of those the work that was done by ESSA to develop the monitoring inventory will fold into the Science Tracker and should be a useful tool for all of you. In terms of the monitoring enterprise review, your anticipated report and recommendations are included in the governor's water resilience portfolio. So I think people are very much looking forward to the recommendations that you're going to provide. And if you haven't seen the water resilience portfolio, I would encourage you that the final version of that just came out in the last few weeks. Of course, the conveyance project that you heard about this morning is another thing that will obviously be on your plate coming forward, and something where there'll be a lot of opportunity for you to provide input and where a lot of benefit from your input. Then the last area I want to highlight in terms of upcoming or ongoing issues is improving connections with the Bay and the watershed. For me, coming working in the Bay longer term, that's something that I've been really interested in. And I've been, I think we've had a lot of good discussion on that. And I think now we need to think more clearly about how we can more effectively engage with the Delta and the Bay and the watersheds. Your purview is in the Delta, and the council's purview is in the Delta and Suisun Bay as well. But that's definitely in a broad sense. And I think we all understand those connections, and we are aware of the importance of improving science across those systems. I know Jim Clern is a major advocate of thinking about those connections with the Bay. So I think there's lots of opportunities there. On the watershed side, there's lots of opportunities. The voluntary agreements that have been on again and off again, we'll see how if they move forward. But that's another area where I think there's a real interest in applying science to those watershed issues. I think the Independent Science Board and the Science Plant Program really should be thought of as models for those watershed efforts, so that we are clearly linking the science and incorporating independent review into the science being done in the watersheds. And I know you've heard about the voluntary agreements of a few months ago from Steve Rothert. But I think we'll see as those continue to move forward. I would encourage you to stay aware of that. So I'll just close by saying it certainly is a complex and interesting system. There's never a dull moment in the Delta. It definitely takes time to get engaged. It's been a challenge for me. I feel like I'm just beginning to get up to speed on things, but there are many people that are deeply invested and knowledgeable in the system. And so I know that they would be happy to engage with you. I think the panels that you guys have put on have been really valuable. So I encourage you to keep doing those panels in terms of educating yourself and educating the community on everything. So I look forward to seeing your input going forward. I'm really happy that we're so successful in bringing outstanding new members to the board. It definitely will be a major transition, but as I mentioned, I think there's lots of interest from the outgoing members and others to maintain some continuity. So feel free to reach out. And I look forward to interacting with all of you. So thank you again for the really interesting 3 years, and look forward to further connections down the road.
Great. Thank you so much, John. We can take questions or comments from the audience on John's tenure and the words that he just shared with us.
No questions, just a great big thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I want to thank him for the honey that he's provided to us over the years as well from his beekeeping in his backyard.
John, I'd like to just say one thing. If we were together in a room, we would be standing and clapping right now. That's how much we appreciate you.
Thank you.
Why don't we give him a clap?
I can Zoom stand. Clap.
Yeah, thanks, John.
Well, you guys are all too nice. I've truly appreciated interacting with all of you and getting to know all of you. And as I said, I hope to continue interacting. So it's been a real pleasure.
All right. Are there any comments from the public for John Calloway?
There are none.
Okay. Well, thanks again, John. Your tenure as Delta lead scientist has really been phenomenal. And I look forward to watching for more great things from you in the next phase of your career. So at this time, we'll hear reflections from outgoing members of the Delta Independent Science Board. As I think most of you know, this is the last meeting of the five original members who were appointed in 2010. And those include Tracy Collier, Richard Norgaard, Vince Resch, John Weens, and myself. So we've asked each of the outgoing members to share some reflections orally during the meeting. And then we also have asked them to provide written reflections, which we plan to collate and have sort of as a collection that maybe endures beyond just the meeting discussion. So I will, we'll start with Tracy, who's going to share some thoughts and reflections on his term as a member of the Delta ISB.
So first, thanks, Liz. Thanks a lot. First of all, I asked Liz yesterday if she could let me go last, so I could just say, like they all just said, because we're all going to say a lot of nice things, and I tend to ramble, for those of you who know me. I want two things I wanted to talk about. One is the teamwork and sort of the team aspect of the Independent Science Board and how well that has come together and really gelled over the 10 years that I've been on the board. In doing so, we all brought our own strengths, our own quirks, our own aspects to the work that the ISB was doing. I will say that you're losing some tremendous talent. You know the resumes of the people going off the board. You know there's some truly great scientists and some great thinkers. I'll go in sort of reverse alphabetical order. Liz always goes in alphabetical order. I'll go in reverse alphabetical order. And I'll start with Joy Zedler, who was... until just a few months ago was on the board, and she had a 5-year term. But Joy was a person that came to us and really got up to speed quickly and really brought the issue of the traditional ecological knowledge, considering the viewpoints of the people that were in the Delta before the European wave occurred. She always would bring that to us and make us really think about that. And that was really valuable and treasured. John Weens is just an incredible writer. He is a guy that whenever we had opposing viewpoints and we could not get people to, you know, to come together on a really thorny draft, especially like on the BDCP, John could take disparate viewpoints and understand them well enough and really weave them together in a way that people could see that their points had been respected and considered. And that's a talent that is just, it's left me in quite a bit of awe in to this day, and it always will. Vince Resch is somebody who, he has the ability to just take a project and its multiple pieces and keep it going and keep it progressing and get it done. He is just incredible that way. And that's why you will often, if you go back through some of our old meetings and see who was often talking about some of the different reviews, Vince ended up with a lot of those because he was so good at keeping those pieces going. Dick Norgaard, Dick is our conscience, is our social, was our lone social scientist on the board, but he was about environmental justice, the big thinking. Dick was somebody who just, to me, was really about the embodiment of the spirit of the board, and that's why I think he was our first chair. And then Dr. Canuel, what do I say about you? You've become a great friend. Liz is somebody who has, in my view, Liz just really was careful and thoughtful about the board and what the board was doing and what was our appropriate role and were we doing as much as we should be? Were we being true to the statute? Just really thoughtful and very just good about that, about really getting people to think about why the board was doing what it was doing and was it appropriate. And that's, I think, why we all really pushed her to be the chair now, even though she couldn't serve out the full 2 years. So that's some of what you're losing in the outgoing board members, but you'll all find your way. And again, it's presumptuous to even give you much in the way of advice, because looking at your resumes, we've got some incredibly talented people coming onto the board, and that's, I know it's going to do really well. The other thing I want to just say, and John Calloway touched on it in his discussion. So yeah, we're the Independent Science Board, and we have taken pains to say that quite often when needed. Sometimes it, it maybe didn't sit well with some of the stakeholders in the area because we decided not to do things the way that people wanted them done. But that's our right, and that's what we're supposed to do. But John also touched on the independence of the Delta Science Program. And to me, this is something that's really important for the success of science in the Delta in broadly. The DSP, the science program, really is viewed as an honest broker of the science and commissioning science and reviewing science. You'll need to get to know them, get to know the staff, get to know their abilities. And also, I would urge all of you to pay attention to the independence of the science program. I'm not worried about the site, the ISB. That'll pretty much be easy to do. But the independence of the science program can ebb and can wax and wane with politics, with pressures put on the stewardship council. The stewardship council definitely needs the science program to do some things for them. But as John said, and I just wholeheartedly agree, they need to be viewed in the region as being an independent science program and not responsible only to the council. So just keep your eye on that. Be aware of it. Talk to staff. And when you can, help out and give advice and help them to maintain their independence. And that would be a really useful role. I think only the ISB is in a position in the region to help bolster and maintain that independence of the science program. So with that, I'll pass it on to Liz to pick your next victim.
Thank you, Tracy.
I'm next. Yeah.
Next, we'll hear from Dick Norgaard.
And I would like to say yes to everything that Tracy said. The teamwork is incredibly important. The independence of the science program is incredibly important. And I'm sure he said a few more things than that, but I'll stress those two. I want to pick up on the independence theme and also John Calloway's discussion of collaboration. And I'm going to turn that collaboration into a little bit different, that we're the Independent Science Board, or we, the five of us who served for 10 years, we're the Independent Science Board. We were always absolutely dependent on Delta scientists. So we're independent experts, but we can't possibly actually be experts on all that's going on in the Delta. And so, just like today, we were briefed several times. We were constantly being briefed, but we're being briefed by the people that we're also reviewing. We are charged by the legislature to see that Delta Science is best available. And this conundrum is hard to get around. I think there are two things to pay a really close attention to, and that is to spend a lot of time with the science meetings, the Bay Delta meetings held in Oakland or Sacramento one year or the other, and also attending the meetings of the IEP. So spend a lot of time informing yourself. Well, you're not being briefed, but you're just observing the science in how it's actually being presented to the other scientists. And read the San Francisco Estuary and Watershed Science. Let me put in a plug for San Luoma and his incredible work there. But to be independent and yet be dependent is a dilemma that you just have to constantly be working with. And these are all really wonderful people. And so it's very easy to love them. And yet we have to be independent too. The second dilemma that I want to bring to attention, that was brought a little bit to attention in Carrie's talk, the dilemma of should the board come in early and review something that's underway while it's underway and provide input at a time when it can really make a difference? Or should the board be not a part of the process, but apart from the process and provide its assessments after the fact, so to speak, or after decisions are made by the scientists, then we step back and say, was that decided correctly. There's a real temptation and a real value of coming in early. We can actually affect the decisions that are being made. At the same time, we're subject to the agency scientists saying, well, this is what's been approved by the Delta Independent Science Board. And then we're no longer independent. We're interwoven in the whole process. And there's no easy way out of this dilemma. I think you just have to be constantly aware of it. And as you do things early, sort of be careful how you state it so that you don't get too tightly bound up into the process and have people say, well, the Independent Science Board said this is the way we should do it, therefore it must be right. And I think I'll just stop with that. Thank you. It's been a wonderful trip.
Thank you, Dick. All right. Our next reflections will be from Vince Resch.
Well, you know, I think for all of us that are leaving, this today is really quite bittersweet. Last night I was thinking back of Cliff Dom calling me over 10 years ago and asking if I'd like to be considered as a nominee for the membership. And I have to tell you, over this period, I've learned not just a lot about science, but science and policy, and also the group dynamics. I've really learned a lot about what makes them effective. And of course, learning about what makes them effective is sometimes seeing things that work that weren't as effective. I've been lucky in that I could take the train up from Berkeley, Dick Norgaard and I, and it was always very, very pleasant riding along the bay. And I think of poor Liz taking endless red eyes back and forth to Virginia or to Washington, D.C. during that process, whereas the train was delightful. And also, I want to add something that I think really helped the group in general. Sacramento, which I have to admit, always thought was kind of a sleepy town. A lot of times our evenings together were wonderful. There was, of course, the dinners that people mentioned. But, some of us would go to the Crocker Museum for their art mix nights, which at times were really quite edgy and always very, very interesting. And we're riding mechanical bulls and everything else. And I have to admit, after spending scores of nights on the Delta King, it still hasn't lost any of its charm. So I Liz recommended in our social that some of you think about staying there. And I have to admit, it's one of the things that I'll miss. Now, it also came up in our social activities that it took a lot of time for a lot of us to get familiar with the geography of the Delta. And I do hope that the field trips can start soon, because that's really, really something that helped tremendously, seeing it from the road, seeing it from the water, and just getting good maps. You know, for a lot of our time, we were using the fishing guide maps to try to become aware of the areas in the Delta that we were talking about, Frank's Track or other things. So what do I see as being really kind of on the horizon that's really important? I think Lauren Hastings' review of how we're doing reviews is going to be absolutely invaluable to the new members. What she's looking at is the impact that these reviews have had and various ways that we can probably improve our process. The way the reviews work in reality is they were essentially done by 3 to 5 people, but you know, one or two took the responsibilities of at least preparing the first draft. And you know, you'll hear the term lead authors or writing team being used. But then we bring the recommendations back to the board, or the drafts back to the board. And this was really where a lot of the delays came in, because of many, many, many rewrites and wording of recommendations and trying not to offend anybody. And what I think this happened is that a lot of our recommendations came down to almost a least common denominator. I think if you read the text, you can certainly read what we were saying. But in trying to limit to, say, 7 or 8, or somebody had said that, you know, if there were 10 commandments, we don't need more than 10 recommendations, that I think this is really something that Lauren's going to address and look at some other ways of having our reports come out a little more streamlined. In the past 10 years, I think there were two reports that
really had the biggest impact. And again, these were discussed by others. The first was the Delta as evolving place, which really set that third leg of the water supply reliability and the ecosystem enhancement. And the other one, of course, is the one about rapid change. Now, what I found interesting about both of them and looking back is there was resistance among the board on both of these. One question was, should we be doing this and where are we going with this? Dick really deserves a lot of credit for pushing these things over and over again and really dealing with, a lot of criticism that maybe we shouldn't be doing these. Because I think these are the two things that we really have seen fundamental changes. Likewise, I think the doubling of the social scientists is going to be great. And issues like governance is going to be very, very important in the future. And I think, you've heard a couple of times now mentioned the Joint Powers Authority. I think whether that's going to be a model to start looking at some of the things, maybe even the whole science program in the Delta. So I think that's something we want to be looking at. Several people have mentioned independence, so I'm not going to go into that. But I think if we don't maintain independence for either ourselves or the science program, a lot of the effectiveness is going to go. Thanks as always do. All the members of the board, we got along really well. Brian Atwater, who is no longer on the board, left early, was absolutely a great contributor to so many different things and was always there to be helpful. And we owe him a big debt of thanks for this. But also, I'd like to thank Edmund Yu in particular. He's been wonderful for all of us. He and Karen Kafitz and her predecessors, going all the way back to Lauren Hastings, have absolutely been wonderful in terms of giving us a touch of reality about what's going on in the Delta and with the science program. And likewise, the lead scientist, Cliff Dahm, who's a great friend, and Peter Goodwin, who is just kind of a visionary. I mean, it just was remarkable getting to know him. And again, John Calloway, that really got things done. Working with them has always been great. Likewise, I think the science fellows that we've had have been wonderful, and I hope that program continues, because all of them now, most recently Cheryl Patel, has done a lot of work on the Monitoring Enterprise Review, and all of them were very, very helpful in doing a lot of things. The last thing I want to talk about is what's really impressed me about the science program is the young people that have been brought into it. The quality of the scientists, maybe it's a reflection of the job market that you have a lot of PhDs that aren't getting academic positions, but I think it's more that when you look at people wanting to go into public service, we did a survey of the 80 or no, I guess about 200 now graduate students in our department. And the number one thing they want to do is go into government service. 10 years ago, it was NGOs, but I think that's a really promising thing that we're getting good, very committed and very highly qualified scientists in the science program and in the state agencies in general. So in conclusion, I really enjoyed my time. I'm the only one probably that will mention the social aspects of Sacramento that we all enjoyed, but it's really has been a marvelous 10 years. And Cliff, thank you for calling me 10 years ago about looking at this position. Thank you.
Thank you, Vince. Next, we'll hear from John Weens.
Well, this is hard to follow up on what everybody else has said, because they've said everything I was going to say, but I'll say it again anyway. I can go back to Cliff Dahm. Cliff called me about 10 years ago, a little longer, and raised this issue of whether I'd be willing to be nominated for the board. And he said it would be interesting and important. I said, sure, sounds great. He also said it wouldn't take much time. So I've, it's 2 out of 3 isn't bad, I suppose. But it's been fascinating from an ecologist's point of view. It's the Delta is really a microcosm of the entire planet. It's all about interactions among all the biological components, among the hydrological and physical and geological components. but it's also about interactions with the people. And as everyone has been pointing out today, and really for the entire decade that we've been on this, you can't consider the Delta without considering its people. And we're an independent science board, and we've grappled over the years with how much we should get into the people side of things. And I think as we have evolved, we've recognized that we can't just talk science. We can't bring science to bear on what happens in the Delta without considering the people in the Delta and the people beyond the Delta. The Delta is pivotal to the state of California, but the Delta is also a case study of many places throughout the world. So there are lessons to be learned that are much broader than just the lessons of the Delta. I think we have credibility as a independent science board because of the science we've brought to bear on the issue. But as everybody has mentioned, we also have credibility because of our independence. And I would simply echo everyone who has stressed this. Independence is a very hard thing to protect. There are lots of pressures that chip away at one's independence. And I think it's terribly important that the board and the Delta Science Program continue to have the perception of independence among all the stakeholders, the scientists, the agency people, the users of the Delta. That way our science, the science that we bring to it, has credibility that goes beyond the science itself. We can bring our CVs to bear on things, and that gives us immediate stature with a small group of colleagues, but means nothing to most people. So it's our credibility that carries us, and the credibility is partly that independence and partly the science, and those are co-equal elements, really, of what we do. So I've learned a tremendous amount. When Cliff asked me to join, I said, sure, sounds good. I didn't tell Cliff at the time that I didn't have a clue what the Delta was. I didn't know where it was. I didn't know what it was about. I thought, you know, deltas are where rivers flow into the sea. So I started my learning curve really at zero and learned a lot. And as I've learned, it has influenced how I've thought about things. And the thinking in turn has influenced what I've been writing about things. I've been involved in writing two books during my time on the board. And the Delta has figured prominently in the examples and the lessons that I've used there. So it's had an influence on me and my writing that really extends more broadly to anyone who has bothered to read any of these books, which I don't look at the numbers to find out. I think that the thing also that has impressed me and which I've found tremendously satisfying about being on the board is the other board members, the collegiality among us, the not just how we conduct ourselves during meetings, but how we've collaborated on our reports, how we've gotten together for dinners and social gatherings, how we've interacted. And the thing that, like all of us, I've served on various kinds of boards and committees over the years. This one has been really very distinctive in terms of the level of dedication that people have brought to it, the way they have really been concerned with the charge of bringing the best science to bear on issues in the Delta. But I think I've been most impressed by the fact that there have been zero egos on display. In most of these conferences, committees, things that one serves on boards, there tend to be one or two egos that tend to emerge and overpower things. I've never seen that on the DISB. Everybody's, if they have egos, they've left them at the door. And I don't think they could leave them at the door for the entire 10 years. So I think we're dealing with people who really have not tended to dominate, have come in as equals, as listening to one another, respecting one another, and at the same time being independent, being willing to say what they think and not worry about it. And I think the final thing I'd say, again, it's been said by everyone else, is the importance of putting this in the context of the people in the Delta and the context of the social and political and economic forces in the Delta. We're charged with bringing science to bear on things, but the science has to be done in that context. And that means that in the end, when we're putting together our reports, we need to constantly be thinking in mind, keeping in mind how this is playing, what is relevant. Do we go off on scientific flights of fancy, or do we really try our best to present the science, filter the science, interpret the science, communicate the science in ways that are going to be most useful to the broad audience that we're addressing in the Delta? So I'll leave it there and turn it over to Liz. Thank you.
Thanks, John. So, gosh, it's hard to add very much original content to all that's been said. Like the others, serving on the Delta ISB over the past decade has just been an incredibly rewarding experience and really one of the highlights of my career. I just feel incredibly fortunate to work with my esteemed colleagues on the board, with the three different Delta lead scientists, with the staff and the leadership of the Delta Science Program, and also with the Delta Stewardship Council. The Delta is just a fascinating system, and so it's really been very stimulating to discuss and review and provide guidance about the many different science issues that affect the Delta, as well as the opportunity to work with so many great minds and rich experiences. But really, it is the I think the friendships and the professional relationships, the camaraderie and the collegiality of working with all of you that I'm really going to carry forward from this experience. So I want to begin by thanking Cliff Dom for inviting me to serve on the board. I really had no idea what I was signing on for, but I also had no idea that it would be the tremendous growth experience that it has been. And also, I want to thank he and Lauren Hastings, who I think very early on got us established and really sort of, I think, inspired the culture of the board. It was also a great pleasure to work with Peter Goodwin and John Calloway. And I'm also grateful for the opportunity to work with Jessica Pearson and Susan Tatayan and Randy Fiorini. They've just been such incredible advocates for strong science in the Delta, and that science should be used as the basis for management and decision-making. Also, it's been a tremendous honor and privilege to work with the board members. We've been talking about the people of the Delta, but the people of the board is also a very important consideration. And as all of you know, there are so many excellent scholars in the community. But it's really, I think, unusual to find the level of mutual respect and trust and dedication and ambition that has been characteristic of this board. So I thank you all for that. I think since its very beginning, there's really been a shared culture of scholarship and professionalism as well as collegiality. I also want to give some special shout outs. So I want to thank Dick Norgaard and Tracy Collier and Steve Brandt and Jay Lund for serving as chairs of the Delta ISB. I think there's not always an appreciation for the role of the chair. I mean, I think we all appreciated it, but taking on the chairship is really a big responsibility. And I know in my own just very short term as chair in the past 14 months, I really gained even more appreciation for the time and dedication that each of you gave to the chairship. And I learned from all of you, and I tried to use what I thought were the best parts of each of your leadership styles in my own time as a chair. And then we've often sort of broken up into writing teams and work groups. And I have been extremely fortunate to often end up on the same team as Vince Resch and Dick Norgaard and Tracy Collier. And so I just want to give you a special shout out and thank you for your wisdom and your friendship and for enriching my experiences on the board. And I also want to thank Joe Fernando and Tom Holzer. They have brought incredible new and fresh perspectives to the board and added depth in areas that I think we didn't have as much depth in before, such as the earth and the physical sciences. And also I want to thank Joy Zedler for her friendship and her support, and especially for encouraging the use of experimentation and adaptive field experimentation in Delta restoration projects. I think that there are really important lessons in her encouragement to use those approaches, and that there's a lot to be gained. I guess ultimately we want to work toward restoration, but there's a lot to be gained in doing those restoration projects in an experimental framework and garnering lessons from those experiments. So as I wrap up, I have to say I owe a debt of gratitude to Edmund Yu for the many ways he has supported the board, particularly the way he has supported me during my term as chair. His continuously steady hand and professionalism, attention to detail, have truly been an asset to the board, and have especially been an asset to me. So Edmund, thank you for making my job easier than it would have otherwise been. And finally, I'm disappointed we can't be together, but I am really looking forward to a future time when we can have a reunion in Sacramento or elsewhere and gather together again. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Liz.
Thank you.
So let's see. So thank you, everyone. There were many wise words spoken, so I appreciate it. So let's open up the floor. I know a couple of people have mentioned that they would like to say a few words. Joy, would you like to say a few words at this time?
I would. Thank you, Liz. Well, Southern California salt marshes were my research focus for nearly 30 years. But in 1998, I was enticed to go back to UW-Madison to lead the restoration research program. But while my feet and my marsh boots were in Wisconsin, I realized that I had left my heart in California's coastal wetlands. So it was an honor to be invited to join the ISB and a privilege to work with top scientists. Thank you, fellow ISB members, for sharing your wisdom. While I learned a great deal and added advice on wetlands, the wear and tear of travel led me to retire after just one term. Extra thanks to Liz Conwell for chairing the board, to John Calloway for leading the science program, and to Edmund Yu for what I'd call herding us cats. I welcome the new lead scientist and new board members, and I'm eager to follow your accomplishments since now I'm leaving part of my heart in the San Francisco Bay Delta. Thanks for this opportunity to say thanks.
Thank you, Joy. It really was a pleasure to have you as part of the board, and I'm sorry we only had you for 5 years. Let's see. Cliff, did you want to say a couple of words?
Yes, please. I appreciate the opportunity to just make a couple comments. It's been wonderful listening to all of you speak about your experiences on the board. I think first I would like to welcome the 6 new board members. It's going to be quite a transition, but an outstanding group of people have been brought into the board, and Jim, Virginia, Tanya, Diane, Bob, and Lisa, good luck with this. If I can be of any help in the future, don't hesitate to call me. The other thing I wanted to particularly say was a very deep and heartfelt thank you for the 5 of you that put a decade of your lives into this project. Your dedication, the hard work, the really excellent collaboration and camaraderie that you had, your insightful reports, and the outstanding science that you kept bringing back to people who working in the Delta so that they had a sounding board that they can go to for very important issues that that you took on these last 10 years. I did want to just briefly say one thing about the process of putting together the original board, the original 10 members. 5 of the members are not with us today, but the other 5 members are Brian Atwater, Mike Healy, Edward Hood, Judy Meyer, and Jeff Mount. And then the 5 that you've heard from today have been really amazing troopers. You might be interested in how you got selected. I'm not sure I've shared this with all of you. When the Delta Reform Act was passed in 2009 during the special session of the legislature, there were 5 bills passed, one of which was the Delta Reform Act. And the Delta Reform Act has the language that required the creation of the Delta Independent Science Board. That legislation was passed in November. The council was appointed early in 2010, and the Delta Stewardship Council had its first meeting. I always find this entertaining, on April 1st, April Fool's Day, 2010. And at that meeting, one of the things that was basically put as a charge to the lead scientist was to begin the process to select this board with up to 10 members. And so that process basically progressed over the summer. Some of you reflected on phone calls that I made to you, asking a number of you to consider being on the board. We had 66 applications, so there was considerable interest in the board. Of those 66, I think a good 20 of them were vetted thoroughly, and then the 10 of you were actually selected. I want to tell you that there was another person that I think played a very important role in pulling this board together. She was a sounding board for me and certainly also had some very insightful input, and that was Anke Mueller-Solger. She was the lead scientist for the IEP, for the Interagency Ecological Program. And Anke, I think, has much credit to be given for the board that was ultimately appointed in 2010. So thank you again. Decade has flown by. Many of you look as young as the day that you first came to Sacramento. Some of you don't. And thanks for what has been a very good 10 years. The new board members, I think you'll find that similar kinds of interesting and wonderful opportunities lay ahead for you. And I just wanted to say thank you again to the five of you that spent 10 years as members of this board. Thanks.
Thank you, Cliff. See. Other comments? I don't know. Steve, go ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks, Liz. Firstly, I want to thank you, Liz, for being, for stepping up and being the chair over the last 14 or 15 months. I know the chair is a challenge, and I know that you also have two other full-time jobs, as far as I can count. And you've done a terrific job. You've done great leadership. You've had a, especially through these, I want to say, more challenging times with the pandemic and a transition, a beginning of the transition of a new board members. And we've just made a lot of progress. It's been a joy for to work with you in the leadership, but for seeing how you evolved this board under your leadership. Normally, as the outgoing chair goes out, we take you out to dinner, or else you buy us all drinks. I'm not sure which one it is, but hopefully we'll be able to do that at some stage in the future. And thank you for your service as the chair. There's also a tradition we give you something fishy, thanks to Vince created this tradition. Usually it's a fish tie, but I think this year it was a fish buff, if that's what I understand that you already have received from Vince. So thanks, Vince, for keeping that tradition going. So anyway, I just want to thank you for taking on the chairship and for doing such a terrific job and keeping us, putting us in great shape for the transition to the new board members. Now, as for the five original board members, I also want to thank you for your service. I really can't add an awful lot to what's been already said. I think Tracy said it right in the sense that you have each bring these very unique strengths to the board. And I think John pointed out the collegiality of the board, but I think it's all, I would even call it more of a camaraderie, because it really is a group that works together as a team. And I think you all started that when you originated the board and created sort of this atmosphere of not only hard work, but an atmosphere that encourages creativity, encourages independence, encourages ideas. And it's just that atmosphere of working together as a team, I think, which is really a core of what this board has always been about. And the respect that you've built for the board is evidenced by the fact that you've been able to attract a number of great people from across the country to want to be part of it. So I think without getting too flowery, I think that you've really enhanced the lives of all the other board members and really have done made the Delta a better place. So I think... thank you, and we do look forward to having you continue on all the reports you've been working on, and we will be getting back to you and hopefully someday have a proper sort of going away party. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm going to miss all you guys. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Any other comments or reflections from members of the board?
I'm pretty sure that when I stopped being chair, I had to buy drinks. I don't think anybody took me out to dinner.
We can negotiate that.
Yeah, we can negotiate that.
All right, go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I just wanted to say something about Tracy because he summarized the other members, but we didn't get the skinny on Tracy for the new board members. Tracy, to me, was sort of our closer because every time we get into these long discussions, we needed some way to finish it up, and Tracy had a unique way of bringing insights to that. He also brought a vicious sense of humor to it, and we always had to figure out whether he was serious or not. So I think that helped a lot with the congeniality or our ability to stay in one room for such long periods of time.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom. And Jay?
I'd like to say thanks to all the board members continuing and the ones that are retiring and recently retired. This has been just a great group of people. They've been very productive together. They've brought different kinds of diplomatic skills to the range of kinds of problems that you get with a group of 10 people trying to write reports on subjects where maybe 8 of them don't know very much about the subject on many occasions. It's a great intellectual challenge, a great diplomatic challenge and writing challenge. It's been a really great group of people to work with. The problems of independence that have been mentioned, I think, are going to still be with us.
Can I say a few words too? And I'm certainly going to miss all the intellectual stuff, not only intellectual stuff, all the humor, as well as our dinners, certainly with you guys. So I really going to miss all of you, and thank you for being such a good group of friends and also fellow scientists. It's really not a sad day, but in some sense it's a sad that we will not have those dinners anymore. I hope you will join time to time, and also John Calloway, who has been such a great friend, also a guidance for all of us. Certainly we look forward to working with all the new members of the board. And so it's certainly, I hope that this camaraderie somehow they continue in one way or another. And thank you all again.
And a quick word of advice for the incoming board members: when you do finally get back together again in person, you all should at least once take a drive with Joe driving the car.
All right. I don't think I see any more hands. If I'm missing you, just jump in. And if not, maybe I think we'll give an opportunity for public comments on this portion of the agenda.
Yes, hi Liz. Tim Musson from Regional San would like to provide a public comment. Tim, I'm going to make you into a panelist. So within a few seconds, you'll be able to turn on your camera and use your computer microphone.
Hi, everybody. My name is Tim Musson. I am a scientist at the Sacramento Regional County Sanitation District. I predominantly work on issues relating to the Delta, and I wanted to take this opportunity to thank the outgoing board members for their contributions to Delta Science. It's been a real pleasure attending your meetings and learning your different personalities and perspectives on Delta Science, and the insights and different considerations that come through the thematic reviews. I really appreciate your willingness and openness to discuss or at least hear public concerns from stakeholders and other scientists, and the respect that you have shown all of us in providing comments. I think that independence is certainly important for the usefulness of the reviews that come from the board, but also, you know, stakeholders greatly appreciate the opportunity to be part of those conversations. And I think that the Independent Science Board is a fantastic venue for bringing scientific conversations together on the different important subjects that we have moving forward. So overall, I wish I could meet with you in person for a more personal farewell at the end of the meetings, but hopefully I'll get to see some of you within different Delta engagements toward the future. So I also want to thank the new board members for joining. I look forward to having conversations and learning your perspectives of the Delta moving forward. And you know, thank you all for the service that you provide to the greater Delta scientific community.
Thank you, Tim. Yeah. Thanks for being a loyal public participant.
Thank you, Tim. We appreciate your comments. And yes, we appreciate having seen you in our audience on so many occasions.
It's been a pleasure. I'm glad I was able to contribute, and I really appreciate the opportunity to learn from all of you.
I also see a public comment from Lindsay Correa. I'm going to make you a panelist, Lindsay, and if you're using a phone, please also dial your phone number with *9.
Hi, board members. I wasn't sure if I'd be able to do this or not. I'm Lindsay Correa, member of the public, formerly part of the Delta Science Program, and I just wanted to echo a lot of the thanks that you've already heard and reiterate some of the just amazing qualities that each of you have brought to the board. I was there for the first meeting of the Delta Independent Science Board, and I'm really grateful that I had the opportunity to learn from and observe and, you know, benefit from many of your leadership. So I just want to thank you for your humble and respectful leadership over time, your thoughtful commitment to Delta science, challenging the status quo, and just your engagement as well. You are inspiring in so many ways. The outgoing board members, especially your, I think Tracy touched on John's amazing ability to have communicate in a captivating and eloquent way. I think Phil Eisenberg would repeatedly quote your science, the good enough science, your ability to engage with policymakers, the public, and really bridge gaps. Thank you for inspiring Delta Science to think big, to challenge the status quo when it was necessary. But mostly, I have so much deep gratitude for your investment, not only in the technical elements of Delta Science, but also in the people. I think you all spoke to the people very much. And so I just want to thank you for leaving a lasting impact, not only on the science and the quality of it for decision makers, but all the also the people you encountered over time. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Lindsay. And on behalf of the board, I can say the feeling is mutual. We have a tremendous respect for you and the many contributions you made to the Delta Science Program.
Thank you, Dr. Canuel.
We also have another public comment from Tony Risk. I'm going to make you a panelist, Tony, and if you're using a phone, please also press *9.
Mute. I need to start video. Hello, everyone. I want to thank you. I have followed you for the last 2 days. For the last 20 years, I've been following the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta from our days down in Los Angeles. This year, as I mentioned yesterday, I became Director of Engineering at the San Joaquin Area Flood Control Agency. So now I drank the Kool-Aid, you might say. And I have followed the work of Dr. Jay Lund, John Weins, and certainly Richard Norgard for many years. And I look at this panel, and this is such a powerful house of great intellect. And I'm grateful to be here, and I'm looking forward to continue to follow your meetings and to continue to learn from all of you. This is all I have to say, and I thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Risk. We appreciate your comments.
I see no further public comments.
Well, thank you, everyone. So we have just spent several minutes focusing on sort of a retrospective, but now it's time to look forward. And the next agenda item is preparation for upcoming Delta ISB meetings. I'm just going to cover some of the kind of a broad overview of September. Right now, the meeting in September is scheduled for the 17th and 18th, but it will likely only be a one-day meeting, and the meeting day and time are still yet to be decided. I'm sure that Steve will be working with the board members to decide on the day and time that is most appropriate for you to meet. That September meeting will be the first official meeting of the six new Delta ISB members, and it will be the first meeting with Steve Brandt as the chair of the Delta ISB. So in terms of agenda items, there'll be a focus on discussion of current reviews and the process working toward completion of those reviews. Possibly there will be an action item related to the ecosystems review, depending on the feedback that is received from the public comment, as well as comments provided by board members. That review may be ready for content approval in September. Something, I don't know if this will happen in September, but something that will be coming down the road is an opportunity for the new board to elect its chair-elect. And then there'll be the typical items for follow-up and preparation for upcoming meetings, as well as public comments. So I don't know, Steve, do you want to add anything? I just tried to keep things with a broad brush, since there's a lot of uncertainties still about that meeting date.
Yeah, given the uncertainties and the new board members, it would be my intent to call each of the board members individually and talk to them about just getting their feedback from this fire hose they've been drinking out of the last couple of days, and get their sense of where they think we ought to be going in the near future, and maybe for the next 6 months, their interest in various possible review panels, what kind of pace we want to be moving at, and things like that. And that will I want to do that in a time before we actually set the agenda for the September meeting. So expect that call, both the continuing and the new members, sometime between now and during the first week of September, and then we'll set an agenda and go from there.
Thank you, Steve. So next, I'll ask Edmund to give us a review of items for follow-up from this meeting.
Hey, Liz, I think I see Dick waving.
Yeah.
Oh,
Yes. Sorry. So a follow-up from this meeting, but maybe not high on Edmund's list, but very high on mine. We have gotten feedback from Vince, some editorial suggestions on the manuscript. Two of you have sort of said, gee, this looks pretty good, I like it, but haven't gotten actual feedback. And then several of you have not given any kind of feedback. It's probably best to do this through Edmund Yu, as has been done before. But we would like this to keep moving fairly quickly. I don't know how much more quickly I can say than quickly, but you know, mid next week would be really, really fine. And then any board member who does not want to sign on, that's also important to say. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, Dick, for kicking off our follow-up items. I actually had a question on when you wanted comments back, so thank you for being ahead of me. Always forward-thinking. So in terms of follow-up item, the first I have is a follow-up item for staff. So at this meeting yesterday, Jay disclosed that he joined a board of a small consulting firm in Southern California by a former student of his. And he also disclosed that he's part of a National Academy of Science panel on plastic pollution of the oceans. So after this meeting, staff will update our disclosure page to reflect this. By August 24th, we should receive any public comments back on the current ecosystems review on invasive species. At that time, members of the current board are encouraged to submit additional written comments. At this meeting, I think there was some discussion on having the paper be more Delta-centric. So that has been addressed in the current version, but if there are additional ways that you can think of making it more Delta-centric, please provide those individual written comments to staff. For the outgoing members, by August 31st, if you haven't already done so, please be sure to provide comments on the latest water supply reliability draft report. For those who are leaving the board, please be sure to also prepare your written reflections, and then we'll compile those for the public at our next public meeting. And lastly, all of the current outgoing and incoming members should be expecting a phone call from Steve Brandt soon, kind of to help smooth the transition and also to help with planning our September agenda. So please keep a mind for that. With that, on a personal note, I would leave a follow-up item for myself, and I'm going to have to get used to my life without both John Calloway and all of the outgoing members. I don't know how I'm going to adjust, but I just want to thank you guys. It's been a pleasure working with you, and you've really pushed our way of thinking and how and kind of like going beyond my comfort zone based on just sitting in your conversations, being able to read through your reviews has been a really great benefit in terms of my professional growth. And I'll really, truly miss you. And on that note, I haven't forgotten the longstanding follow-up item about a Delta map. So stay tuned. And with that, please let me know if I miss anything for the record.
Thank you, Edmund. I think you captured everything. Just as a reminder, we'd like to have the written reflections by a week from today, so that we can put those together as a compilation from outgoing board members. So at this time, we can take public comments for matters that are not on the agenda, but are within the subject matter jurisdiction of the Delta ISB.
I currently see none.
All right. Well, on that note, it's my pleasure to adjourn the meeting. This has been just a tremendous experience. I'm happy for the experience to meet all of the new board members, and I see so much potential in your talents and expertise. So I have tremendous optimism for the future of the Delta ISB. And it was also a pleasure to reunite with everybody on Zoom. and have a chance to share our reflections with one another. So thank you, everyone, and I adjourn the meeting.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
We'll miss you.
Thanks, Liz.
Thank you, Liz.
Thanks, Liz.
Thanks, everybody. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, everyone. I really enjoyed the reflections.
Hey, Laurel. Good luck.
Yeah, nice to see you, Laurel. Keep in touch.
Will do, definitely.
Bye-bye.
All right, Bob and Jay.